Charla?
Yes, the operator just started the call.
Okay, terrific. This is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team 2 conference call of December 13th. This is Brian Cutes opening the call. We have in front of us 2 hours of discussion on any potential final modifications to the recommendations in our report. We have the agenda, proposed agenda on the screen. Are there any proposed edits or changes to this agenda? I'm not seeing any hands up on the Adobe. Okay, the agenda is deemed approved. Let's move forward to item number one on the agenda, overview of the call. Effectively we have 11 items here, but the general thrust is to continue the discussion that we started earlier this week, and the real focus here is interaction with ICANN staff on proposed recommendations to determine whether any modifications should be made to the recommendations as drafted. So that's why we're here. Before we launch into the substance, I just want to do a quick stock taking. I am trying to follow the proposed edits to recommendations that have come in from ATRT2 members. And I just want a quick stock taking. I've got, I've seen something from Carlos and something from Olivier. Has anyone else on the call sent in by email suggested changes to the draft recommendations? If you just indicate that right now.
It's Alan. I did last night. Not a final one, but much closer.
Okay. So Carlos, Alan, and Olivier. Anybody else?
Hey, Brian, this is Fiona. We'll be sending the GAC-related ones in later today.
Terrific. Thank you, Fiona.
But I do have one question while we're on this. Is someone going to circulate a complete set of revised recommendations to take a look at? Because my understanding is the call on Tuesday is to sort of finally, you know, close everything out. So can we expect, like, a complete, you know, summary document or something?
Yes.
Or what were you saying?
Yes, we can. The reason that both Larissa staff and Paul Diaz, who is helping on the editing process again, were holding off was they felt it more efficient to wait till we had all proposed edits and recommendations in and to do it in one fell swoop. So, I think after today with the GAC-related recommendations in and after this call, they'll be in a position to put that together and circulate it. And, yeah, the purpose of the call next Tuesday will be effectively we've got the final proposed recommendations drafted in front of us, and it'll be walking through to make sure that we have consensus on them as they are, and then they're locked down and we go into final editing of the report mode.
Okay, so I think what we'll send is a redlined version so it's easier to see the edits, and then we'll include the paragraph that summarizes the public comments that have been received of 11 or 12 or whatever that have come in that are related to this as well.
Terrific. And Lisa, before I come to you, I just want to check Larissa. Is my summary consistent with how you see the process going? If I was wrong there, please let me know.
This is Larissa. Brian, yes, it's consistent. I would just add to Fiona's point that staff is prepared to turn around a complete first draft of the final report, which would include recommendations as well as any additions, summarizing public comment or further analysis. But in order for us to be able to do that, we need to get that from ATRT2 by Monday based on the calendar due date that I had circulated earlier.
Okay. And thank you for that addition, and that's understood. Lisa?
Well, Jürgen sent in some changes to the financial part, but we haven't sent any other apart from that.
Yes, and I did see those. So I've noted those, and I confirm that, as stated before, no proposed edits or recommendations have been integrated into the draft report yet. So urines were seen and will be incorporated once we have all the final proposed edits in.
Okay.
With that being said, just to, again, before we jump into number two, so on our last call, we did a very nice job of walking through the document, which was the initial staff assessment in response to ATRT2's draft report. And we covered a lot of ground. We went ahead, had discussion around a number of those inputs and ATRT2's reaction to them. The purpose of today's call was that there were certain draft recommendations in the staff's assessment document that we didn't get to, and so we're going to walk through those today. And ICANN staff is here to be with us in that conversation. But I also think it would be wise for us before the call is done to perhaps just revisit a few points from our conversation on Tuesday. I sent an email last night that outlines the points I think we want to touch on and make sure that there's consensus at this moment. And I believe you all saw and I referenced that ICANN staff had sent another document that had proposed revisions to text of recommendations coming out of Tuesday's call. I think we should walk through that as well. So a lot to cover in 2 hours, but I'm confident that we can do it. So without any further ado, I get item number two is reviewing the schedule and due dates. And Charlotte, if you have that text, that outline from the last call, can you put that document up? It came out of my email where I put the deadlines for the various inputs out to the team. Nope. But I like it. The One World Trust Report.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was in there. Hold on.
No worries.
Brian, this is Larissa. While Sharla is looking for that, perhaps I could just speak to the key deliverable dates that I had outlined for the ATRT2 coordination in an email yesterday, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. My understanding was that on Monday, December 16th, the ATRT2 would deliver to staff revised content, which would include recommendation language, any discussions or rationale for changes made to the draft to be included in the body of the report, summary of public comments and feedback received from Buenos Aires consultations. I just wanted to highlight if there will be any changes to the executive summary other than updating the language of the recommendations. Then that would be the third piece. And once that content is delivered to staff on Monday, within 24 hours, we'll be able to turn around a final report draft number one that would be circulated to the review team for review prior to Tuesday's call so that at that point everybody could take a look at all the content in the report and the wording and make sure that that meets with everybody's expectations. Then any changes to that would come after the call on Tuesday. Ideally, by Wednesday, within 24 hours of the call, we would have the final content changes, and then staff would turn around another version by Thursday, December 19th.
Yeah, that's good. And we're in sync with you. And, yes, there will be changes to the executive summary. To make it even more succinct and streamlined, maybe just a reordering of some of the – that will come to you as well by Monday.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So what we've got up on the screen is we're looking for – so first, today, any of the editors who are drafting the recommendations themselves – please, if you have edits to make to the recommendations, have them in today. The GAC-related recommendations, as redlined, are coming in today as well, too. So if everyone can meet that deadline, that's important. And then number two is inputs from ICANN staff regarding implementability of draft recommendations. That was due on Wednesday, and we're having the follow-up call today to finish that discussion and see if that discussion results in any changes to recommendations. Public comments, item three, as noted, Carlos, there's 11 comments that were received that I saw as well as of last night. The reply comment period closes today. There may be more. So when it closes, we'll check that. And everybody on the team, please read those comments. For the editors of recommendations, please pay particular attention to the comments that relate to the subject matter of your recommendations. And by Monday, if you believe those comments support a modification to the recommendation, send that in to the list, the edited language of the recommendation, and importantly, the citation or quotes or text from the comments that supports that change. That's a very important piece. So that's number three. For the One World report, we are waiting on that from staff. Larissa, do you have an update on when that might be available to us?
Larissa, you're on mute.
Question, can you repeat your question, please?
Do you have any update on the draft One World report and when the ATRT2 would receive that?
Yes, we did receive the draft. We're in the process of reviewing it right now and anticipate being able to share it with the review team on Tuesday.
Okay. The last item is citations. So I just asked that if you have modifications, edits to the recommendations coming out of the comments, get them in by Monday, and provide the quotes, text, citations from the comments along with that edit. The Tuesday deadline is also a deadline for citations generally. If any team member, in going through the record of face-to-face meetings, public comments from either of our public comment cycles, input from the staff, basically the record itself over the course of our work. If you think there are citations that are useful in the text of the report, and we need to be thoughtful about that, this isn't just willy-nilly, please send those in by Tuesday at 1700 UTC. And then we can go about the business of working those into the report. Tuesday, you should...
Anyone else still there?
And that that come Friday, it's really in final form. So any questions?
Brian, it's Alan. I lost you for about a minute or so and just had static. I don't know if anyone else did.
Yes.
Oh, sorry about that. So item five, citations. That's citations that are important to include in the report from any part of our record over the course of our work. Get those in by Tuesday. Be very thoughtful, too, just not, you know, citations for citations' sake, but if they support a conclusion, the analysis, and they are meaningful, then provide those by Tuesday. By the end of Tuesday, we're going to view the inputs as closed. And Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are the days where staff and Paul and myself can be making sure the document is clean and in good shape. And come Friday, we want it to be locked down. So Tuesday really is the cutoff day for any inputs. Any questions on the schedule? Okay, not seeing any hands. Let's go back to the agenda. The next item is cross-community deliberations, and those are, that's recommendation, I'm sorry, what does the 10 refer to in parentheses and agenda item number 3?
Those are the recommendation numbers.
Okay, So with respect to recommendation 10, we have 15 minutes for discussion with David Olive and Marika Koenig. From the ATRT2 side, just can you remind me who owns the drafting of recommendation 10?
Alan.
Okay, Alan, if you would take point on this. And we're making reference to the initial staff assessment of and response to ATRT2 draft report and recommendations documents. So going to that document, number 10, which has quite a few, cross-community deliberations, I think without reciting all of these suggested changes, I guess why don't we start with the staff and have David and Marika, if you would, could you hit the specific high points of what changes you think should be made to recommendations under 10, and please be specific from a numbering standpoint when you're speaking, like 10.1.3, we think X, et cetera. So with that, I turn it over to David and Marika, and Alan, if you take point, and then open it up to anybody else from the review team.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. I presume they have both seen the new revised version, because I think an awful lot of the issues have already been addressed.
David and Marika, have you seen Alan's proposed revisions?
Yes.
David, I'll here first. Let me start. Please, Marika, go ahead. Yes, we have.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just a note that I actually had a conversation with Alan yesterday and already conveyed some of the issues or concerns I had about some of the recommendations or questions. And I think I've seen the revised draft, and from my perspective, I think most of these have been addressed because there have been some additional clarifications in those. So I think I can save you some time on this item because I believe most of my items have been covered by the updates that Alan has made to this draft.
Okay. Are there any open issues on 10 recommendations? I guess that's a question for both David and Marika from your standpoint and for Alan.
David Olive here. Our initial concern when we were reviewing this was that some of our staff comments that we weren't sure that it had gotten to Alan and to others, and that was the reason for a further consultation with Alan and Marika and myself. So I think with that, that should be closed. I don't see any other open items to raise at this stage.
Okay. Alan, anything from your side?
Two things. And let me just try to focus on where it is in the recommendation. In the new 10.3, which is called 13.3 in my version, because I was using the text from the body where the numbering was different, the 13.3 now reads, 10.3 says, the board and the GNSO should charter a strategic initiative. Both Marika and I felt we have too many strategic initiatives in ICANN, and they get confusing. So we're looking for different wording there and just saying something with priority, but to be honest, I couldn't come up with a better set of words. So I'm highlighting that for the group as you read it. If you can come up with some wording that implies this is important and must be a priority, but not reusing what is becoming a rather mundane word, strategic in ICANN, that's a thought. And lastly, the last bullet on 13.4, 10.4, was originally targeted at PDP comment processes. In the discussion I had with Marika, we realized that if it's going to be done in PDP comment processes, it probably should be done in general comment processes, and that is give commenters an opportunity for pointing out the staff summary has a mistake in it or misrepresents something. And so I would suggest that one actually be moved into the public comment recommendation because it's no longer specific to the PDP. Other than that, I have no other comments. I still need to go over more carefully the public comment period, the public comment input, and my notes from Buenos Aires. But I think I've already covered most of the substantive issues that have been raised there.
Thanks, Alan. Just so I'm following the bouncing ball, the last recommendation, and I'm now referring to the staff response document. You're referring to 10.4.2 on the comment process?
That's correct.
So your recommendation is that that recommendation be moved to the recommendations with respect to the comment process generally?
The reworded version of it, yes, correct.
Okay, thank you. Noted. Okay, any questions from the review team on these points? And again, we're all going to have one last opportunity on Tuesday to look at these revised recommendations and say, yep, we agree, or I think there should be a modification before we close it. So I'm not seeing any hands up. David and Marika, thank you. That was very, very efficient time management. Really appreciated, and your inputs are appreciated as well. Okay, let's go to number four, board performance and work practices. These are recommendations 1 through 3, and I've got Amy as the point for staff on this, and these were drafts of mine, so Amy, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Brian. I don't know if, Larissa, did you share with Brian some of the suggested edits that we made following Tuesday's meeting?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, those are. I referenced those in my email of last night. So, do you want to refer to that proposed language now?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, because basically, I think we went over all of these on Tuesday. Then we tried to, based on that conversation and understanding, edit some of the language of the recommendations. Brian, I don't have your email, so Larissa, could you forward that to me, please?
Absolutely.
Charlotte, can you pull up the document that we just referenced, the proposed changes to language from staff that came across yesterday or the day before? As a separate document from this staff assessment document.
I'm sorry, who sent that document out?
Larissa did. I'll pull it up myself, but if you can hunt that down and put it up on the screen so we can all make reference to it as we go through the discussion with Amy here, that would be helpful. Let's see if I can get it. I'm hunting myself, so just give me a minute as well to get to it. Okay, it was sent yesterday at 8.02 p.m. Eastern, U.S.
So, Brian, while you're hunting for that, I think if we're looking at number one,
yeah.
The latest I had gotten from Larissa was that your idea was that you were going to remove this particular recommendation.
Actually, the there was a piece of it that I thought we might do away with, which was the regularly assessed director's compensation levels. And that was my perspective. I honestly need to make sure that the review team is comfortable with that. My thinking behind that was the point was made that the board is in the middle of a compensation review right now, that the board did the original compensation review after ATRT1, that the board is committed to doing regular compensation reviews as an organization would. And for that reason, I offered that perhaps we might drop that part of this recommendation. And to be clear, that's what I was suggesting.
Got it. So that's number three?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the last part of three as I had it drafted.
Okay.
And I've now got the document. Oh, we've got the document up on the screen. Is that up yet?
No, it's still the old one.
Yeah, while we're waiting, Brian, this is Denise. Just to clarify, so I believe our takeaway from the last call was that the team wanted to drop number one, which was focused on qualitative analysis of specific board members, but go forward with the compensation assessment that's included in recommendation three. Is that what you're saying?
Let's be very clear here. I'm looking at the staff document that was sent by Larissa yesterday, which starts with number three. So for purposes of clarity, number one, which was focused on assessing the performance of individual directors, yes, my recommendation was that be dropped. Number two, which focuses on the performance of the board, is preserved. Number three, the last part of number three, which calls to regularly assess directors' compensation levels, I was suggesting that, given all those points I just made, ATRT2 could drop that from recommendation three.
Okay. Got it. Thanks, Brian. In terms of that part, dropping it is fine. We are committed to doing it. If you leave it in, it's fine because we are committed to doing it. We had a couple of suggested changes to the first half of number three.
Okay. Let's do this, Amy.
I think it's up on the screen now.
It is. But before we go there,
sure.
I don't want to get ahead of the review team.
Oh, sure. I apologize.
Yeah, let me do two things. Let me check on number one, the review team members' comfort level with dropping number one, which was focused on individual directors' performance. I had put that forward earlier. If anybody on the review team has a strong objection to that, please raise your hand now.
I do. This is Aubrey.
Aubrey?
Yep.
Yeah, please.
I do. Right. Okay. I understand that the reason we're taking that out is because it might be difficult. It might be difficult to do it anonymized. What I had mentioned was that I believe that this should be done, and I believe that we need to find the longitudinal ways of doing it, and we do need to be able to do an appraisal. The board itself is already doing this 360 review and of its members, and I believe that we need to find some way to record that information and to have it and to follow it longitudinally over time. So I'm actually not comfortable with dropping the requirement. I'm comfortable with sort of adding words that acknowledges the difficulty of doing this in a non-prejudicial manner, however, still suggesting that a method be found. Thanks.
Okay, so let's discuss that. I'm making sure that I have all the facts. The reason I was suggesting it, to be clear, was what I heard in Buenos Aires was that, in fact, assessment 360, not really 360, peer review of directors was already being done. What I heard was that the review that was being done was very comprehensive, that it had been used in nomination cycles. And so it was on that basis that I was suggesting we could drop the recommendation only for director-level performance assessment. So if I got the facts wrong, that in fact it's not being done, then we'd need to clarify that first and foremost.
Brian, it's Amy. I can speak to the facts if you'd like.
Please.
Yes. at present, the BGC now facilitates and oversees a, whether you call it a 360 review or a peer review, but they do a review of the five board members, voting board members, that are going to be leaving at the end of the AGM. So after the AGM, so after, let's say, just right now, a review of the five board members whose terms are up at the end of 2014 are being evaluated. So they do five every year. Because five board members turn over every year. That information is then fed to the groups that are responsible for selecting those five. And they are held confidential until it is determined which of those five board members are seeking another term.
Okay.
And then the group uses them as they deem appropriate for that selection process. That's what's happening right now.
Okay, thank you for that. So, Aubrey, is your hand up again? Alan,
yep.
I see your hand.
Yep. No, up.
Okay, yeah, Aubrey, okay. why don't you pick that point up, and then Alan will come to you.
Okay, thanks. Two points here. One is just the fact because something new has been started is not a reason that we've used throughout this second pass of the review for removing things. The recommendation that it be done stands in its own place no matter what processes may be in the process of being done now. So that's one reason for not removing it. I actually have one question on the question of fact. Some of these elections happen mid-year. For example, those that aren't NOMCOM are elected by the various SOs mid-year. Are those reviews done and made available to the voters in plenty of time for that? And that's part of this whole process, that not only the NOMCOM, but also the voters would have information in a timely manner. And just to make sure that that's sort of codified and not just something that's an experiment now, but that could go away. Thanks.
Yes. Aubrey, to answer the question, if I might, Brian.
Yep, please.
Yes, Aubrey, that's actually one of the reasons why we start that review immediately after this AGM, so that those will be completed in sufficient time to give to the SOs and or the at-large in anticipation of their selection process as well.
Thank you.
Alan?
Thank you. First of all, a clarification, although Amy didn't use the term and specifically didn't, the term 360 review is still being used. Currently, that is not what is being done. So I think for clarity, we better make sure we're using correct terminology. What we were told at our last case at the meeting in Buenos Aires is that each director, other directors who work closely with that director, be it on committees or whatever, are identified, and then a random selection of those do the evaluation. So my understanding is the evaluation is actually done only by a small number of two or three people. So that's point number one. So terminology counts in this kind of case. Second of all, and I'll defer to Olivier in a moment, the last we heard, it was not at all clear that this evaluation was going to be made available to the electors. And that makes a big difference, because doing evaluations is one thing. Doing evaluations and never letting any of them see the light of the day outside of the board, or not letting them see the light of day of people who have to make the decision, is a rather different thing. So I think we need some clarity on that. I hope Amy is correct, but I haven't heard a confirmation in the specific case of at large whether that is indeed correct or not.
Amy?
Yes, so, Alan, I know last year, which is the first year we did this, and we are in the process of doing it again right now, so I know that the plan is this is going to be standard operating procedure going forward. Last year, Bruce, as the chair of the BGC, sent the evaluations to each of the leaders of the groups to whom the selection, to who are making a selection. Last year, the ALAC was not, or the at-large group was not making a selection, so they did not receive anything. I believe this year, Sebastian's term is up, so my understanding is that the ALAC leadership, or ALAC will receive it, and it will be up to them how widely they distribute it in terms of the process of electing or selecting their board member.
Thank you. I mean, I guess I'd like to hear from Olivier, because there was strong discussion in Buenos Aires about whether that would in fact be made available to the electorate or just to selected leaders or the earlier selection committee, you know, that creates the slate but not does the election.
Yeah, I believe that's up to the ALAC leadership, so I'll step out of that one.
The last we heard it wasn't, so that's why I was asking if Olivier has any input on this now.
Okay, Olivier's here, but Steve's hand is up. Steve, first.
Okay.
Steve Crocker, are you there? You may be on mute.
And indeed, I was on mute. Sorry. So I can add a little bit. Much of what I was going to say has already been said. So to the points that Alan and Aubrey have raised about whether or not this is shared in time, that's been very high on our list of things to make sure we get right. And what Amy has said is correct, that we're pushing hard on that now in order to make that input available in a timely fashion. When we aligned the board terms, what we didn't do was change the selection timing of the SOs and ALAC. That information is needed so that NOMCOM can do the geographic balance. So we're very cognizant of the timing requirements there, and we have then focused on getting the evaluations done. I've been working with Green to try to get a process in which the year-long calendar that shows all these dependencies is laid out well in advance so that everybody is well aware of the coordination that's required. As Amy said, we make the evaluations available to the leadership, and then what happens there is under the control of the leadership. So for ad hoc, talk to Olivier. To Aubrey's point about
Steve, you just broke up a little bit.
Having a recommendation. Can you hear me?
Yes.
To Aubrey's point about making a recommendation irrespective of what we say is happening, that's fine with me. We've generally been trying to tighten and improve this, but it's been in place for a while. We'll be happy to document exactly what happens. I think it's a little broader than what Alan said of just a couple of people, but I also agree that it's not necessarily a complete 360 review. So we'll be happy to be precise about what happens there. And the larger question is, so do these evaluations actually provide the information that you would want to have about the performance of board members? How to approach that beyond what we do? We're happy to provide the questions, the questionnaire, the methodology, and all of that, and it'll be what it is.
Thanks, Steve. Olivier, did you have your hand up? Olivier, please.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. Just a first two things. A question to Steve with regards to the institutionalization of those 360 reviews. If tomorrow, well, not tomorrow, if in a few years' time we had a new board who suddenly would think, well, you know what, these 360 reviews are a real pain because they make us look like we are a bunch of people who do absolutely nothing. Let's just put these 360 reviews out of the way. Would they be able to do so?
Would they be able to do so? Well, yes. The board can do an awful lot of things. You can phrase a lot of questions in the form of would the board be able to do X, Y, or Z. The cost of doing so is that it would be visible. And in being visible, there were consequences. How quickly those consequences would come into play depends upon what the situation is. But, you know,
So the gist of my question, Steve, it's Olivia speaking, and you're breaking up. So, the gist of my question effectively is it worth institutionalizing, you know, putting those 360 reviews within the board in ICANN's DNA?
Well,
so as to make it harder for any future board members to take those out of the way if they don't like them.
Yeah, I would say it's already in the DNA. If you want to try to institutionalize it by putting it into the bylaws, my reaction would be that's probably the wrong approach to take, in that you don't really want to lard the bylaws with too many unnecessary things. Now, if it turns out that there's some sort of persistent or deep issue, then maybe you want to do that. But until you see that there's actual resistance, in fact, there isn't any resistance, and I think once it's become, well, it's already standard practice, I think it would be hard to cut it off. I don't think there's much fear there. So I think it's a non-problem that you'd be addressing.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. So that was my first question. It's Olivia speaking again. Now, just my feedback with regards to how the ALAC will be using the 360 from the current ALAC selected board member. The information will be shared to a board candidate evaluation committee that is effectively the first hurdle to all of the different candidates that will be applying for the position. That candidate evaluation committee has signed a confidentiality agreement, so they will keep all of that information confidential. There is currently discussion within the ALAC as to whether all of the ALAC, the 15-member committee, should have access to those records, plus the leadership of each one of the regional at-large organizations. That's another potentially 5 to 10 people in addition to the ALAC. So we're looking at 25 people. At that point, confidentiality becomes a lot more difficult, and therefore there is discussion as to whether there should be a confidentiality agreement signed by all of the ALAC members and the regional leaders. But we're not there yet. That's all. Thank you.
This is Brian Avi. Before I come to you, too, I want to be careful that we be thoughtful about not being too prescriptive. The recommendation, not using the term of art 360 or something like that. Currently, it says develop objective measures for determining the quality of ICANN board members, .. That seems to me to be appropriate, and also I want to watch our time on this issue, too. We seem to have consensus on the result. And with that being said, Avery?
Thank you. Two questions, and I'm not quite sure we're at consensus, but perhaps we are. I think at this point, given what we've heard, actually just requesting an explicit notation of what it is they are doing and the full details may indeed be sufficient, and leave it up to ATRT 3 to basically look at it and see whether what they've done is enough. And two, though, one of the things, now, Olivier was talking all the way through about this evaluation needing to remain confidential, whereas others says it was given to the chair, and the chair was able to determine what to do with it. Within the GNSO, for example, where absolutely everything is done transparently, I would wonder, is it explicitly allowed for it to be dealt with transparently in the GNSO if that's what they wish to do? Those are my two questions / issues.
Okay, thanks. If those are questions that belong in a draft of the recommendation, that's something we can consider, but I think we're getting into details that probably can be worked out through implementation.
I think the transparency issue, I think, is fundamental and is not just an implementation detail.
I'm not suggesting it isn't fundamental. But we need to manage our time here, too, and get on through the other points as well. Alan, very briefly, please.
Yep. Thank you. The statement that was made to us here today is that there is no confidentiality imposed from above, and I think that's something that needs to come out in the process. I don't think we can specify it. I also think at this point a recommendation is still warranted. I would not see that to implement that recommendation requires it be put in the bylaws. I think that's a level of specificity that may not be necessary, but simply a statement by the current board that goes on record saying it is being done and will continue to be done is at least something that can be brought up in some future time if a board decides to change that. So I would say stick with the recommendation, and let's try to find wording that is not too prescriptive. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. So I heard Steve say earlier that he's comfortable with the recommendation staying in place, and I believe that's the consensus that we have. Steve?
Yeah, let me just add quickly. The reviews are certainly at the board level, and we come along with the understanding that they will be handled in a reasonably confidential, in a confidential fashion that is appropriate to the process. So we don't prescribe to the NOMCOM or to the SOs or to ALAC the procedure is, but we certainly do expect that it will be handled in a sensibly confidential way.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on. So that was recommendation number one. We're keeping it. We'll review the language, and we'll come to a final decision on Tuesday as to what it should be. Amy, was there anything on number two from staff in the most recent document?
No.
Okay, so jumping to number three, where I left off was the suggestion to ACRG2 that we could consider dropping the regularly assessed director's compensation levels for the reasons I had stated earlier. So I want to just take the temperature of the ACRG2. Is that something people are comfortable with or not? I think I see a green check from Olivier on that point. Alan? Oh, no. I see green checks. Okay. So we're going to drop the last bit that says regularly assess directors' compensation levels. That being consensus point, Amy suggested language from the staff with respect to the balance of recommendation three. Can you just hit the high points on what you think?
Sure. The language we just went ahead and suggested language. The key point here, Brian, is that the information that needs to be had, if it's maintained at all, is maintained by the NOMCOM. So the board does not have access to any of the information. So the idea is that this to having an evaluation of the board candidate pool, the board itself doesn't have the ability to do that, which is why we kind of changed it to ask the NOMCOM to do it or direct it at the NOMCOM as opposed to the board.
Okay, I think that's a clear enough suggestion, and I certainly understand that. And we had a fact question outstanding as to whether or not the nominating committee had sufficient candidate data still saved from prior cycles that would provide the data basis for doing this study. I don't think we have an answer to that question. Unless somebody's gotten that in the meantime, this may require reaching out to the NOMCOM chair to ask two questions. A, do you have the data? And B, if we make this recommendation asking the nominating committee to undertake this study, is that something you could accommodate? I do think those are important inputs. I'm asking for additional thoughts. I've got Denise, Aubrey, and Alan.
Yes. I believe Larissa emailed the list. The nominating committee does not have access to candidate information from before the directors were compensated. And so the challenge here, if you leave the language in about determining if the qualifications of board candidate pools changed once compensation was available, you don't have that benchmark of pre-compensation to look at. But Louisa did email the list about the archiving from year to year that the NOMCOM does. It only keeps prior years' candidate information if the candidate expressly gives them permission to do so and to consider them further for any openings if the candidate does not provide that permission, then the candidate information is deleted. And so if the NomCom is to do an analysis, it would have to be an analysis each year when the new candidate pool is created. And then, of course, just as a completely separate note, for those who aren't familiar with avenues to the board, there are, of course, board members who are seated through selection from the SOs and ACs, and they have their own processes and candidate pools. So that's something to consider as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry I missed that email, Larissa. So the facts from the NomCom is that they have no data on candidates prior to 2011, to put a fine point on it?
That's the information we received from them.
Okay. So that being said, there is a question of whether there is a benchmark available to measure against. And if there isn't data prior to that, I think that makes it a problematic study. In that light, I think that opens some questions about the utility of this recommendation. I'm going to open it up for about 5 to 8 minutes of discussion from ATRT2 members as to what to do with this. Please be concise. Alan.
Yeah, I mean, what we've been told here is basically what candidates are told, that is, if you do not explicitly say carry it over to the next year, and it's only to the next year, that everything will be deleted. And we're told NomCom participants are told the same thing. I think we have a real problem. If indeed there are secret copies kept somewhere for legal reasons to make sure people didn't lie when they applied or whatever, I think we'd have a real problem if the ATRT said go review those documents that don't exist and come up with an analysis of them. So I don't think we have much choice but to delete this.
Thank you. Any other thoughts on this? Yeah, okay. I see Avi's post. Okay. I think in light of that information that this recommendation needs to be dropped. Okay. Amy, anything else in number 4 on the agenda?
So I'm not sure what number 4 on the agenda is, because I don't see it. What?
Board performance and work practices, recommendations 1 through 3. We just covered them.
Oh, no, I think we're good.
Okay, moving on to number 5, policy/implementation/executive function. It should say /administrative, too. So this is the recommendation picking up on the continued work on recommendation 6 from ATRT 1. And I am taking on board, I'm not sure, I don't think I've sent out a draft, but I am taking on board staff's suggestion to use only the policy versus implementation vernacular in this recommendation. And in making that statement, I want to make sure that the review team members are comfortable with making that adjustment. Whereas ATRT1 used the word executive function and administrative, that for purposes of clarity, policy versus implementation be the vernacular used in this recommendation to frame the work going forward at the community level. Is there any objections from the ATRT2 members on that point? Steve, that's an old hand, right? Or is that a new hand? Aubrey?
Yeah, I don't have an objection because that is the language that everybody's using these days. I do think it will need a footnote somewhere explaining why you've moved from one set of language to another and perhaps indicating a slight mapping between them, but it makes sense.
Good point on the footnote. Thank you. Any other points on this? Okay.
Yeah, it's Alan. My only comment is I'd like to see the final language before I say, yes, I'm comfortable with it. I have no problem dropping the term executive function. I do have some worry that because of the confusion in the community about different meanings to words that we're using, I do want to see the final wording before I bless, you know, bless the change. But yes, dropping executive function, I have no problem with.
Thank you, Alan. And you will for Tuesday at the latest. Okay. Amy, coming back to the proposed edits from staff on recommendation four, I see the changes in text, proposed changes in text, continue supporting cross-community engagement, whereas the draft, the latest draft I had says continue cross-community engagement. It's slight, the difference, supporting versus continue. I think the draft I have, the draft I've got in place suggests an active role almost as participant. And the reason that's there is because the ATRT1 recommendation was directed to the board to take action on this point. So hence the reason for that construction. And I think the proposed change here to continue supporting cross-community engagement could introduce a non-active or passive posture for the board and the staff. I'm not saying it's an end-of-the-world type change, but I think there is a difference there. And I'd like to understand from you what you think the impact of the proposed changes in text from staff would be.
Sure, sure. And I agree that it's not an end-of-the-world change, whether it's there or not. The thought that we had was we just wanted to make it very, very clear that the way this has progressed is that this is a community-led process and that the board or the staff is not directing how it should be, is not mandating what should happen, but they're doing what they everything we need and the community wants from us to help support the process. That was the only intent of the word supporting, is just make it clear that, that it's not coming from the board or the staff directing how it should happen.
Yeah, and that sensitivity is one that we all fully appreciate. That
yeah.
We wouldn't want a perception out there that this was top-down from the board.
Exactly.
Yeah, fully appreciated. Let me take that thought on board, and if there's a way to tweak the language here. I do think, though, there has to be recognition that this was a recommendation to the board to do something from
sure.
AT1, and in this AOC review process, it will always come back to how well did you implement that. And that's a lens we have to have over this as well. So let me think that through and see if there's a way we can come to a middle point there.
Understood.
The second piece of that is develop complementary mechanisms whereby the supporting organizations and advisory committees can consult with the board on administrative matters on which the board makes decisions. And I think, Avery, did you own that piece of the draft of four? It's indicated that you did.
Yeah, I guess I did, and I'm not sure. On 9-1, I don't see a recommended change from staff. I see a significant one on 9-2 that I was going to comment when we got there. But on that second piece of 9-1, is there a problem? Is there a change required to it? I thought that was something that was already sort of being done, and, you know, it was a recommendation to cover the codification of something, as it were. The 9-2, yeah, I see that there's a suggested different language.
Do you see the screen, Aubrey, on the Adobe?
Oh, I was actually looking at the file. At the screen, all I see is it's the same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing.
Well, they're effectively
the
side by side. It has
Aubrey. And we're talking about number four, I think, right?
Yes, number four on the screen.
Oh, I thought we had already made it to five. We're still at four.
No.
Sorry.
Can you see number four, Aubrey?
Yeah, I got number four in front of me.
Okay, if you can read under your draft, develop mechanisms whereby the supporting organizations, et cetera, and then look over to the right, and it's the second part of that draft, develop complementary mechanisms. That's the suggested change in text from the staff. If you could read that and just give us a reaction.
Sure. Why not?
Thank you.
Yeah, I was append for 9.2, which was the first one where I had an issue with their language. Sorry. I thought we had gotten there.
No worries. Just if you can, and you can think after the call, but can you give a reaction to the suggested change in text from staff?
I thought it was okay.
Okay, you've read it and you think it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I said.
The only question I have is, since we are changing the vernacular to policy versus implementation and getting away from executive function and administrative, is that last bit of administrative matters out of sync?
No, because it's policy, it's implementation, and perhaps administrative matters are a third sort of thing that we'll identify before long. Or perhaps it'll end up an empty bucket. I think when we get to the policy and implementation in other places, we may also find that we've got a category of administrative matters that are separate from implementation. So the fact that we have three buckets in this one doesn't bother me in the least.
Okay. Okay.
I'll still say that we have to be multi-stakeholder at the administrative level, but that's a different issue. But that there being three different buckets of objects is that you know, from a factual analytical perspective, that some things are not really implementation or policy, that they're more administrative, that may indeed be the case of the analysis.
Okay.
And Brian, just to add in, that's exactly, Aubrey, what we were thinking is that there might be some of those that don't fit quite in the development or implementation process. That's exactly what we were thinking.
Okay. Sounds like we have agreement. Okay. I would let's move on. Making progress. Thank you. And to Amy, I think we're done with five, unless there's something else on your end.
Done with five? I thought there was
No. I'm sorry. Number five on the agenda, which is recommendation number four.
Okay. That's what keeps confusing me.
Yes.
I keep jumping to five when you say five.
I know. Sorry.
Pavlovian, what can I say?
We're done with number five on the agenda, unless you have anything else, Amy.
Nope. I think that's right. Thanks, Brian.
All right. Terrific. Thank you. Let's move to agenda item number six, GAC operations and interactions, and conveniently, also recommendation number six. Fiona Alexander indicated that the redlined versions of those are coming in later today. Were there any points that either staff or I don't see Larry, Fiona has on this point?
So I'm just going through the comments now that have come in, and the one thing I wanted to put out to the group, there's been a couple other suggestions of recommendations. I think Carlos has been sending some of those on the list, so I'm trying to incorporate those as much as I can. But the one thing, just wording-wise, there was a sensitivity to the board requesting the GAC, so we'll look for the right wording so that people are less sensitive to that. But overall, the comments are very responsive. But I think there was still some, from the staff feedback, a question about some of the recommendations. I think the first group we didn't go over on the call on Tuesday. So I wasn't sure if there was going to be any staff further follow-up on that or not.
Staff, anything?
I'm sorry, which recommendation number are we on specifically? Or are you just talking generally about all the six and the subtopics under six?
I think it's the one under number six and the subtopics, because we went over the other ones on Tuesday. So it was the first grouping.
Denise,
right.
This is Larissa. I think that's the grouping that we didn't discuss on Tuesday because Olaf was not available at that time. He had already signed off, but since then, we know that staff and Heather had an opportunity to connect
right.
and discuss. So I don't think there's any further open items from the staff perspective.
Yes, correct. Yes. Oh, I'll finally connect with Heather, and I think everything is fine there. I think more broadly, I think the only additional comment that staff wanted to explore with you was, or perhaps clarify, was the certainly the intention of staff supporting and going forward with all the recommendations and on meetings and other engagement with the GAC, to perhaps the broad wording in the introduction that notes something along the lines of clarifying that this, the intention here isn't to ask the GAC to get involved in sort of staff operational matters, but rather to engage broadly
so that's,
on the process.
So that's specific to the 6-8, the 6-8, 6-9, these are the ones with the Global Stakeholder Engagement Group?
Right, right.
Yeah, I think I remember on Tuesday there was a suggestion that this might be a little bit too sort of the GAC dictating the work methods, but did you guys have specific language, or I think Heather might be on the phone. Is there language that you guys have worked out that is more comfortable to describe the spirit of what we're talking about?
We can certainly suggest some language. I think there's certainly alignment between the goal and intention here with the Global Stakeholder Engagement staff and the GAC. So we can propose specific language that just clarifies that relationship, and that we could use the term. Would it be better to just some trade emails offline, or we can discuss some wording here? What would be better than our agenda and timing?
I mean, I'm up to Brian. I think it's really recommendation 6-8. So the recommendation is the board should request the GAC work with ICANN's GSE group or team to develop guidelines for engaging governments. So I guess the question is, what's the wording that I think, and I don't know, Heather, I think, is on the call. Maybe she has views. I don't know.
Hi, this is Heather. Brian, if you will permit me, perhaps
certainly
help a bit here. I really thought that on the call on Tuesday we were getting a bit too much into the mechanics of things and to the point of perhaps beginning to constrain the review team, which is an independent review team and meant to function as such, to actually make recommendations to the board and to the GAC via the board to look at issues like the stakeholder engagement. If there are clarifications to be made to the text, I have no difficulty with discussing those. But provided we're not getting into such detail that we're not making appropriate use of the time of the review team, and also not respecting that there is that line between refining the language usefully, which is really meant to be high level, and allowing for further discussion and for implementation questions to be addressed later on, and actually getting into maybe some of the finer points, perhaps a bit too early. And so with this particular example that Fiona's raising, talking about there being guidelines for engagement of governments, well, I fully support the recommendation, and whether we can in fact refine that further or need to, it's maybe less clear to me, but I haven't had any further concerns flagged to me at this point offline by talking to staff, by talking to Olaf, who you might know is the GAC relations staff member at ICANN to help the GAC liaise with other parts of the organization at staff level. So I don't know how clarifying that is, but that's kind of how I see things.
Thank you, Heather. Denise, is your hand up anew?
Yes, it is. So the global engagement staff, I think after the last ATRT call, wanted to reiterate that it fully supports all of the the broad objectives that are articulated in the recommendations. And I think the only, and certainly take your point about not needing to get into too much implementation detail at this point, I think the one suggestion that they wanted to offer for consideration by the team was just a clarification that the intention here is not to, put the GAC or other ACs or SOs in the role of creating sort of operational guidelines or directives for staff or get into that day-to-day work, but rather to agree on methodologies and processes for engagement.
Okay. Any other points on this? Okay. I don't see any hands. Okay. Thank you, and we'll look forward to seeing the recommendations shortly on that. I think we can move on to number 7. So number 7 is on the agenda, is decision-making transparency and appeals process, which are recommendations 5, 7, and 9, respectively. So let's go to that. Okay, and Ree and Brian, number 5. This is determine how the proper scope of redaction could be reasonably confirmed, and the staff has some proposed language. Institute a process to regularly evaluate redacted materials to determine if redactions are still required, and if not, ensure that redactions are removed. Aubrey, I think you were primary on this. I'd like to get your reaction.
Yeah, I think what's missing here is perhaps the other half of it, which is proper scope of redaction had two parts. One is the review of whether something was redacted, should remain redacted, but the other was what things could be redacted and why. And what this suggested text doesn't do is include any of that part in terms of, finding categories. And it was already sort of said that the categories were actually known, what sort of things got redacted when, but basically getting that explicitly defined and then being able to have redactions indicate under what basis they were redacted. So the writing from staff gives us the first part of it, but doesn't give the second part of making redaction clear and transparent.
Just a quick point, and I'm going to ask Amy too. I remember in the process, this goes back a while, that we, in looking at the record, there was a policy developed or refined on this point as a reaction to, I think, ATRT1. Amy, does that policy speak with significant specificity to the categories and the timing?
Yes.
Points Aubrey's hitting on.
Sure, it does. And as I mentioned on Tuesday, we have created, as a result of the ATRT1, a document that's called Guidelines for Posting of Board Briefing Materials, which also has defined areas of where redactions are appropriate. And that document is posted with every set of board briefing materials that are posted. So that's the first step.
Aubrey?
But the other part was that, the other part was that, and we discussed this Tuesday, is that it's good, but it only applies to board documents. It does not apply to other documents that are redacted by ICANN. And so this was a requirement not only on board minutes and notes, or stuff, but it was on ICANN documentation. And so that's part of it, but not, again, it's only board documents at that point.
Okay. I guess I'm just not sure if you could give me some examples, because I don't know what other documents are redacted. I'm not sure that we post any other documents that have any redactions in them, but if they are, I certainly recognize that we could expand this to apply to those as well.
Okay, that was really what was missing in that particular piece. So if the policy is to any other document, and this can include, and indeed, I'm not sure the full scope of documents that fall into the documents given to the board, and whether every document given to the board is under this policy. So you know, that's where I have not perhaps necessarily understood. But also, I thought I had seen, but I don't have the example in front of me, I'd have to go find it if I can, is when sometimes documents come out of, there's the example. When we got the copy of the hotline documentation, when it was finally released to us, it was released in a redacted manner. Now, the reason for that redaction was also made clear to us in the cover documentation we got, saying it's redacted because it has the telephone numbers and we don't want to, et cetera. But that's an example of another document where you did it, but it doesn't fall under that policy.
Understood. I think that's the one reason why we made it really clear of why. But we can certainly take a look at expanding this policy. Understood. I get your point, Aubrey.
Thanks.
Okay. I don't think that covers the discussion. I see Alan's hand is up.
Yeah, I originally put my hand up to say I thought that Amy had said what she then said she said. However, the discussion of what other redactions are there, I would think the other prime one is under whatever ICANN's, you know, Freedom of Information Act is called, you know, where you can request documentation, and there certainly are redactions in that kind of thing. So I think it would be helpful if, I'm not sure where we are at this point, if we're requesting, or certainly ICANN widen the clarification so that it applies wherever redactions are done for whatever reason. Thank you.
And Brian, just a quick response to
sure,
that.
Sure, Amy. Yeah.
So, Alan, thank you for that. Yes, in fact, I can't say that the reasons match up one for one from this policy, but the documentary information disclosure policy under which you're talking about that people reference, it itself has the basis for those redactions and withholding of information. So they are laid out already in that policy.
Okay.
So, Amy, just so we're clear, does the DIDP cover all other documents, or is there perhaps a category that's not covered by that, and therefore, to Aubrey's point, we should have an element of the recommendation that broadens this?
It covers anything that people ask us about that isn't already posted, and in response to whatever it is, if we are intending to post additional information, it gets posted as opposed to just sent one-off, right? So it covers all of those. Frankly, the thing that that Aubrey mentioned about us sending to you at your request of that particular policy is the only other document that I can see that we didn't just go ahead and flat out post. But I think we could go ahead and expand if you think it's appropriate, suggesting that the guidelines for posting of board briefing materials is expanded to posting of materials in general. And then we can take a look to actually incorporating some of the grounds that are in the DIDP into the guidelines, so it covers everything.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm hearing is the direction of the team on this recommendation.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Okay. And we'll have a last shot at it on Tuesday if any other points arise between now and then. Okay. Let's move on to number seven, recommendation number seven. Mechanisms to improve public comment, board planning regarding number of consultations, et cetera, given anticipated growth. So staff is, can we go back to the document that Larissa sent yesterday with proposed new language on the screen?
Hey, Brian, it's Fiona. Just to point out, the intellectual property constituency had some pretty detailed comments on this recommendation.
Oh, yes, thank you. Yeah.
I'm just reading them now. That's why I pointed it out.
Then, yeah, no, and they had some very active comment during our face-to-face in Buenos Aires. Let's be sure we capture that. Okay, I'm not seeing any. So for recommendation number seven, I'm not seeing any suggested change in language from staff in this document. Amy, were there any points there to cover off from a staff perspective before we move to number nine?
I'm going to let Larissa or Denise take that one.
Okay. Larissa, Denise, any points on number seven, recommendation number seven?
No, Brian, this is Larissa. I don't believe so.
Okay. All right, let's move to number nine. And for 9.2, we have some proposed new language from staff. Aubrey, you've got the point on this one, so if you could look at the proposed new language from staff, give us a reaction.
Yep,
I know one of the changes was to change ESEP to ASEP to make it correct, but Aubrey, if you would.
Yep. Sure, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate most of the language. I'm fine with pretty much all of it. I think it all makes sense, except for maybe one little thing at the bottom, which is, I think, still somewhat a slightly contended, but I don't want to get into contending it, but basically including that the ICANN board and cannot legally cede, and I would just ask that it's including the degree to which the ICANN board cannot legally cede, keeping us out of the arguments where people have made, and these are lawyer-type, professor-types that know more than I do, sort of saying it's not as absolute as everybody always says it is, and there may be ways to do something so that this discussion does not preclude that, but by having the words in, the degree to which, we're sort of admitting that, you know, absolute, or are there indeed legal pathways within California, as I say, various professors, and I can dig up the names, but I'm sure you guys know them anyway, have argued that there is leeway. So if that change to it would be the only thing that I'd be looking for.
Almost sounded like a lawyer there for a second, Avery.
A philosophy student, child of two lawyers. What can I say?
Right. So taking into account any limitations, the degree to which there are limitations is the direction you're suggesting this goes.
Exactly. Just so that is not completely closed from the start, should we want to, as this discussion go on, review those possibilities that have been put forward by legal professors.
Okay. All right. So directionally, that may be an edit. Amy?
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. I think that's fine. I mean, I have no problem with that. I'm obviously, as Aubrey pointed out, there are some people who disagree, and I think we'll always agree to disagree. So I'm completely sympathetic to Aubrey's further revision to that.
Okay. Any other, Aubrey, any other reaction to the suggested language from staff?
No, I thought it was, you know, fine, good language, and I thought it improved the clarity of the original language.
Okay, so you hold the pen on this one, so if you would, you know, edit the recommendation and then edit this as we just discussed and send it back, and then we should have dispatch with 9.2. Okay, staying in the nines, we've got proposed language or points from the staff on 9.4, which was, okay, the expanding the transparency report to be a transparency and accountability, or accountability and transparency report. And Avery, again, I think you were the primary on this one.
Yeah, and I have not done my work on it yet, so I haven't written any change yet. So, for example, where I'm being asked to provide more examples to clarify, I still need to do that.
So I want to ask a question on this because we've discussed this a bit, and we've discussed this in different contexts. I think, Avery, when you first proposed it, you had examples of other transparency reports that you were pointing to, and you were putting this forward as a transparency report. Expanding it to be an accountability and transparency report, I believe, was introduced in a different context, or at least was discussed in the context of improving the AOC reviews going forward. Some discussion on, hey, if there were an accountability and transparency report that were issued on an annual basis, that could be helpful in facilitating more efficient and effective reviews going forward. It could be one piece of the inputs. It could help staff in terms of getting into the routine of doing annual reports and tracking all of the implementation efforts. That was another context that we discussed this in. I want us to be thoughtful about this. Do we intend it to be that type of a tool? If we do, do we want to suggest annual accountability and transparency reports? Or if not, do we want to leave it more open? And does this become, do we need to be concerned that this becomes something different from an AOC-related tool in terms of content, broader, different? These are questions on my mind, so I'd like to hear people's thoughts. Avery?
Was Denise before me?
Oh, I'm sorry,
anyway,
Denise.
No, I'm sorry. I forgot to take my hand down.
Okay, sorry. Okay, so then this is one case of where when people started, I felt overloading it with accountability. I was kind of, you know, going along to get along type of thing, because, okay. But the more you talk about it, the more I fear it loses what was needed in terms of an in-depth look at the transparency efforts. And they did, could indeed go beyond anything that the AOC had said or mandated, but were according to the, you know, prevailing transparency methods and standards of the time. So it felt to me like it was losing a little bit of the focus that I had originally hoped on. But as I said, team, not just T-team, expanding it to that, while it does overload it and make it more work, didn't unreasonable. So as I said, I was going along with it, but wasn't completely comfortable.
So your points are well taken. I do see utility of this as an annual report, and I do see utility in tracking the accountability. So I think we need to clear that up in our minds, what we intend it to be. Alan?
Thank you. What I'm going to say, I haven't really thought through carefully, but as we're having this discussion, I'm reminded of comments we got very, very early in the process from a number of people in reference to ATRT1, saying they created an awful lot of make work, an ongoing make work, but not necessarily fixing problems. And mandating an annual transparency, or rather annual accountability review, where we don't know how it interacts with other things, we are not, you know, it wasn't something that we've developed from the bottom up, in my mind, has the tone of something which may generate a huge amount of work, may replicate other things, but in a slightly different form, and may not yield results that be just because we haven't actually thought through the process. So I have a little bit, some level of unease about it. Thank you.
Okay. So, Avery, you hold the pen. Unless we hear from a significant number of review team members who are pushing in the making an accountability and transparency report, I'm hearing it tilted back toward as originally offered. And that's what I'm hearing. So, unless there's any other hands on this, not seeing any, let's plow forward. 9.4, 9.4.1. Oh, so the question was to Avery from staff, 9.4.1 through 9.4.5, are these intended as illustrative examples? If so, consider identifying them as such and including them in the body of the report, Section 11, but not in the executive summary. Avery?
I was muted.
Any reaction to the question from staff?
Okay. I think in part some of it was illustrative, and some of it was, excuse me, choking on an almond. So, yeah, I should probably go through Indeed Incorporated. As I said, I haven't done the work yet. I had to get in some, I mean, some of it was examples of things that could be included in the transparency report. In fact, it was a recommendation of things to consider for the transparency report. Again, don't want to get over specific, but it was things like the usage on the DIDP, you know, the degree to which information has been redacted this year, numbers and natures of issues. Now, the other thing that was included in here, which was sort of going too broad and probably should either be cut out or moved to a footnote, is, you know, we have two tiers of sort of transparency in ICANN. Either your people can see it or they can't. And we don't have an intermediate level, which was being referred to as the Chatham House level, where, you know, there was an intermediate amount of confidentiality. But I also don't see a consensus here in the group of people saying, yeah, we should really recommend to the ICANN staff and board that they should have a three-tier with that. So that probably ended up a illustrative example of how they could go from a two-tier, either you see it or you don't, to something intermediate. But I don't know that we're making that recommendation, and so it was in there more as explanatory material.
Okay. And there is the suggestion to change from whistleblower to hotline. So if you would take the staff's questions on board.
Okay.
And come back with proposed language, final language for the recommendation, that would be great.
Yeah, as I said, I was going to work on that tomorrow. I know you wanted it by the end of today, but I'll work on it tomorrow. The other thing on the whistleblower may just go for a hyphenate and such, since different words are used in different places and standards, but I'll pick up some of that data and put it in.
Thank you. Okay, so I think we've worked through staff suggested edits and discussed those, and now the editors have heard the discussion and can propose final recommendation language. Larissa, that covers everything in this document, right?
I believe so, Brian.
Okay. So now looking at agenda item 8, 9, and 10, financial accountability and transparency. These are the last three items for us. We've got
24 minutes, 23 minutes. So let's try to be efficient. Multilingualism. I guess the question is for staff. What were the specific points you felt we needed to consider on the multilingualism recommendation? Anyone from staff?
Brian, this is Larissa. I think there was general agreement on all the points on multilingualism. I noticed that Olivier made some suggested revisions most recently.
Right.
And staff hasn't had a chance to, I haven't had a chance to connect with Nora yet to see if there's any, you know, questions regarding these latest edits.
Okay. All right. So you've got edits from Olivier. Please review them. If you have any reaction to them, make sure you bring them to us for the Tuesday discussion, which will be the final, or if before, please, you know, send that over on the email list so Olivier and the team can consider them. Okay, so that means we can move on to Fiona Songa. Fiona?
Hello, Brian. Thanks. I did make an adjustment to what Olivia had sent through because I realized that the staff have an issue with the summary recommendation for the multilingualism. However, when one friend sent to read through the explanatory notes, it's very clear on what that whole recommendation is all about. But I've made an adjustment to what Olivia said, and I hope that gives a good summary of the entire recommendation, what it's supposed to accomplish.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay. Anything else on Recommendation 8 before we move to 9? Item 9 on the agenda. Okay. Not seeing any hands, so let's go to Item 9 on the agenda, which is the AOC review process effectiveness. That's Recommendation 11. 11 to 11.7. Okay, Denise, and this is actually from Sharla, actually from Larissa. Okay, so implementation timeframes, and I believe this came out of a conversation Larissa and I were having after the call in terms of getting organized, and I was observing the fact that, you know, ATRT1 had put some deadlines in for some of the recommendations, and there was some lessons learned about implementation, and that I didn't envision deadlines coming out of ATRT2 recommendations, but of course that needs to be accepted by the team. So not to get ahead of the team, let me ask on that point. I don't believe any of our recommendations actually have deadlines, start dates, et cetera, built into them. So the question for the review team is that if that's how we intend to proceed, this is how 11.7 could be revised, with suggestion from staff. Any points? Fiona, Asanga.
Thanks, Fran. I did also have a discussion with Larissa on this over email, and my feeling is, insofar as a review team, we are not going to have a time frame for the different recommendations, I'm happy to make the change. If we're going to have time reference for recommendations, then I think it would stay as it is. But from the way things are moving, I don't think there'll be any time frame, so I'm happy to adapt the change.
Okay, thank you, Fiona. Alan?
Thank you. I'm a little bit concerned that we make a change because of what our practice is, whereas we have no control over future review teams. I'm not happy with the revision as it stands. I think we should either keep the old one or say the board is expected to provide expected time frame and a rationale for that time frame.
Thank you, Alan. I guess the thing that I'd seize on in the draft as it stands is the wording, and if that time frame is different from one given by the review team, and there aren't any, I believe there aren't any given by the review team.
But this is a recommendation for how the board handles review team input, not just our review team.
Okay, I'm now reading it through that lens. Okay. In responding to review team recommendations, meaning any review team recommendations?
I think so. We're the AOC. We're giving rules about how ICANN should work in the future.
No, thank you. That's a different lens. And I do see your point there. Okay, thank you. Lisa?
I'm going to agree with Alan. I'm not happy with the changes, and I think if you provide this change, we might, say that the review team shouldn't give any expected time frame, because sometimes you might want to set a time for expecting for the expected implementation, and sometimes you don't need to. So I don't want to tie future review teams.
Thanks, Lisa. Steve Crocker.
Apologies for the delay. I should have taken myself off mute earlier. So just something that I've said several times before, and I'll say it again here. From my perspective, view teams report, but in general, all sorts of reports, any recommendation that has specifics about timing, implementation, and so forth, from my point of view, is necessarily have to be subjected to a review by staff, and first part of what we do is subject every set of recommendations to a feasibility and cost analysis. So no matter what you say about when you want something done, I'm going to ask for the staff's recommendations and estimate. And before we adopt a recommendation, we'll have some internal estimate of whether it's feasible to do it, what resources it's going to take, who's going to do it, and what the schedule is likely to be. So it doesn't matter in practice whether you say something or not about when it should be done. We're going to run it through the same process. The net effect of actually specifying the time will be to convey your sense of what you want, and that's perfectly fine, but I want to help set expectations that that's the way it will be interpreted. It won't be interpreted as a command because it has to be subjected, as I said, to a kind of reality check.
Thank you. Denise?
Steve covered what I was going to, and I'll take my hand off. Thanks.
Okay. Alan?
Thank you. I guess I'll start off by saying if a board or ICANN reacted any way other than what Steve just described, they would be negligent. Review teams can say what they want. I can see situations where review teams may choose to put a target time frame in to convey a sense of urgency, if nothing else. And, of course, that has to be, passed through a rational test, a rationality test, to make sure it's viable and reasonable and can be done. All that this recommendation was trying to say is, number one, the board, in approving something, should give some time frames so that future review teams or the community has expectations set and can judge them against whatever they thought was reasonable. And number two, if indeed they are changing something from what a recommendation said, then provide some background for why that was being done. And the answer may be the time has already passed. Of course, we can't meet it, and therefore this is what we're doing. So, I don't think anything that's being said here is at all unreasonable or putting unreasonable demands on anyone. It just says let's set expectations properly and make sure the community and future review teams who are judging them understand what they're supposed to be doing. That's all.
Thank you, Alan. Fiona?
Thanks, Brian. I think in view of what Alan has said, we could incorporate the issue of rationale so that the board has to give a rationale for the time frame for implementation, and that then captures any potential of a review team providing a time frame that the board doesn't think is appropriate. Then the board would, because the board has to give a rationale for their time frame, then they would give a rationale explaining why they would go in one way as opposed to what the review team proposes. So I would probably add in the board should provide an expected time frame for implementation and rationale. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm happy with that.
I'm hearing, and I take Steve's point at face value and agree with Alan's assessment of a board being responsible in that way. I'm hearing support for the draft as it is, and in reading it through, I'm going to give it some more thought. I think in the best light, it leaves open the possibility that a review team might feel the need to recommend a time frame. I think it leaves open the possibility for the board to be responsible in the way that Steve is describing. And I think that one of the learnings of this review team is that implementability discussions as part of the process are important. And I think that in observing that and suggesting strongly that that become part of the regular process, there's a lower likelihood that a review team is going to make a suggestion for a time frame that is not implementable. And even if they do, you know, the board was well within its rights to say, yeah, we've thought about that, but here's what it takes to implement that, and that just doesn't work, and here's our rationale as to why that doesn't work, and we're going to do our best to implement it over this time period instead of that. I'm not seeing this causing major problems, but I'm just giving you my interpretation of everything I'm hearing. And I am hearing support for the draft as is. I guess, Steve, what I would ask you is just to consider between now and Tuesday, if you see this recommendation operating in a way that really constrains the board in an unhelpful way or complicates implementation, I am all ears on how to tweak this. And just giving you a reflection back of what my thoughts are now.
Well, I don't see a problem at all. I don't see a problem with either of the drafts, either the draft or the proposed, because the obligation, from my perspective, the obligation after receiving the report is to do the and to respond, and part of that response is if we're going to implement it, what our expected time frame is. If the recommendation includes a suggested time frame and our response is a different one, then just as with every other aspect of a recommendation where what we choose to do is different from what's recommended, we will speak to that issue. So I don't have any problem with any of the words that are here. The obligation on our side is to be responsive enough that it would meet either or both of those wordings.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Alan?
Yeah, one thought as we're speaking is that we wouldn't want words which would force the board to say the review team were a bunch of loony dodos for suggesting that, and we're just putting in a rational time frame instead. But I think we have enough good wordsmiths that we don't have to worry about that. Sorry, just a bit of levity.
Love loony dodos. Not enough of them. Okay, we're at the end. Well, we've got financial accountability and transparency, item 10 on the agenda. So I think we've covered this off. If we can move to number 10 on financial accountability and transparency, were there any inputs from the staff on this draft recommendation?
Brian, this is Larissa. No further inputs from staff.
Okay. I would suggest that one modification. for financial planning, strategic planning, and budgeting. It is more of a common practice to do three-year planning cycles and projections. And I think when you get out to 5 years, it just, you know, it begins to strain credibility in reality in terms of financial projections and forecasting and planning. So that would be the only suggestions that I would make. Lisa?
Sorry, I just had to unmute. I'm fine with going to 3 years, changing 5 to 3. I agree, it's more than normal, so no problems with that.
Okay, thank you. Any other inputs on this one from ATRT2? Okay. We're at item 11 on the agenda. So, any other points? Alan, I saw something about you had a question on a GAC recommendation.
No, Fiona, I had the question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Fiona.
My question was to Alan, though, but anyone can answer.
Okay, so the question is?
So the last GAC-related recommendation was sort of a placeholder based waiting for the consultant report, but I kind of think this issue is covered in Alan's recommendation as well. On getting the GAC more involved in the GNSO process. I wasn't quite sure how we wanted to handle this in terms of merging it or if I'd missed this in the conversation, which could have easily happened.
Yeah. Alan, what do you think?
Yeah, at our meeting in Buenos Aires, Larry asked me to make sure that they were rationalized, and I took a lot of the wording out of the 10-point whatever, not 10-point, the something point 10, the last of the GAC ones, and merged it into the one under the community consultation, whatever is under the PDP one. So they have been merged. There's no need for the GAC one. I'd appreciate if Fiona looks at it and makes sure what I wrote is good. But I took a lot of the words out of that one and merged in. So the merger has been done.
Okay, if you can go ahead and send it to the list now, I can take a look. But in terms of the template, I'll just delete this one and note that it's been merged.
The version I sent out yesterday and the earlier versions, they had been merged already.
Okay. One last point, and it's not putting timetables on recommendations, but we have talked about prioritization. And so we're almost out of time on the call here, but I think I would ask all of the ATRT2 members, but let's try to do it this way. If you believe that we should prioritize some of these recommendations, please send an email to the list and do so by Monday and identify the recommendations you think we should prioritize and why. And you don't have to, you know, be long-winded, just give us a succinct rationale as to why. I do think we want to address that question and see if we come to consensus on whether we prioritize or not, and if we prioritize, get some consensus on which ones we think are priorities. Again, I don't think that translates into necessarily giving timelines or deadlines since we're at the end of the process, but I'd ask everybody to do that by Monday so we can talk about that issue on Tuesday. With that, we're at the end. Is there any other business? I'm sorry, and I logged off, so if someone's hand is up, please point that out to me.
Olivier's hand is up, and so is mine.
Okay, Olivier, then Alan.
Thanks very much, Brian. It's Olivier speaking. I was just going to ask, are we going to have at any point a discussion on the actual format of the report, just, you know, editorial format, basically?
Wasn't planning on it. What do you have in mind?
Well, it's Olivia speaking again. I did note from some of the feedback that we received in the public comment period that some were confused by the way the report was set out. I'm not quite sure whether it's what others think on this call, but I certainly was surprised to see that. Although I can't say that I'm overly happy with the way it's currently structured, and perhaps having subsection numbers might help.
So staff, just within the last week, I believe, circulated a completely renumbered version. Have you seen that?
If you haven't, take a look at that version. Staff has made a suggestion as to how to number it, and I very much would like to get your feedback on whether you think that is clear and addresses any of the feedback we've gotten.
If I can ask staff to email it to me, because I've got so many versions now flying in, it's crazy. So many different. It would have been helpful to have version numbers maybe, but never mind.
Yeah, please give some feedback on that, Olivier, and I hear you loud and clear. I intend to create an executive summary that really starts with the recommendations and perhaps shift down some of that contextual narrative, but it's more of a resequencing. Other than that, look at staff's draft and give us whatever feedback you have on that, and that'll be helpful. Alan. Yeah, sure, Larissa.
I think it was actually Fiona.
Just
in terms of the GAC-related recommendations, one of the comments was that we shouldn't use bullets, but we should actually enumerate the bullets with A's or numbers, just for ease of tracking. So I included that in what I've sent. But I'm assuming the staff probably already caught that in the reformatted version.
Okay. All right. Alan.
Yeah, thank you. Just to Olivier's point, I think at least part of the confusion was that we used two completely different set of numbering in the body of the report and in the executive summary. And that alone was enough to confuse people who were otherwise astute enough to try to compare the two. And I'm assuming all of that is being covered.
Well, don't assume. Please take a look at the...
Well, no, I'm going to look at it, but I'm assuming on the first cut that we will not use different numbering in the two parts of the report and have it conflict with each other. I hope that's the target. I just want to note that in an earlier meeting, several meetings ago, we had on the agenda, but I don't think we did, approval of a whole bunch of reports and clean up the terms of reference, which we never did at the beginning of this process.
We never did finish the terms of reference. You're correct.
Okay. Just some housekeeping that we probably need to do, at least approving the reports, so that they can be published and are, in fact, reports of this group before we disband completely. So just a to-do that we need to catch up with sometime.
Yep. Okay. Thank you for that. I don't see any other hands up.
Larissa has her hand up.
Larissa?
Thank you, Brian. I just wanted to respond to Olivier and Alan. So in the staff proposed resequencing that I will make sure that everybody on the ATRT review team has access to, and it's posted on the wiki, has been for a little while. Our approach was not to proposed approach was not to renumber sections of a report, because we thought that that would be confusing for people that had spent considerable time digesting the draft report. So the sections of the report will stay numbered as they were, but it'll be much more clear as to the fact that section, I'm making it up, but let's say section 3 of the report actually pertains to recommendation. Now, well, Alan's example is a good one. Section 13 of the report actually pertains to recommendation 10 on cross-constituency considerations, and that may be a follow-up recommendation to recommendation numbered something else from ATRT 1. So it's still going to be a little cumbersome just based on the fact that how the report was constructed, but something that I wanted for the review team to consider, which is keeping the section numbers as they were in the draft report, not to create additional confusion. Thank you.
In that case, we just need to be really careful. Unfortunately, for better or worse, we use the section numbers as the thing by which we numbered the recommendations, or at least other people did. So if the recommendations are not akin to the section numbers, we just need to make have clarity in how it's presented.
Okay, folks, please take a look at the draft from staff, and if you think that needs to be modified, let us know.
Yeah, the largest single problem, I think, is the size of the report. But we made the decision to include the analysis of ATRT1 in the body and not in an appendix. That's what's ended up causing the size of the report to be as large as it is, and I just can't see redoing that right now, as much as I personally would think it would help clarity, but I just don't think there's time to do that properly.
Thank you, Alan. Any other hands up? I can't see.
No. Larissa still has a hand up, but I assume it's an old one.
Okay, folks. We're at time. Thank you very much. Very good work. Please get edited recommendations in. Please get any edits based on public comments received. Please read them. And citations by Monday. And we will see a draft of all the proposed final recommendations as edited to review on Tuesday, get consensus, and move forward. Thanks, everybody, for a lot of good work this week. Well appreciated.
Thank you, Brian.